This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. As Plato once put it, poetry is nearer to vital truth than history. Poetry is nearer to vital truth than history. Maybe that's one of the keys to understanding why poetry seems to be in our human DNA. And we've been having lots of conversations about this month with poets. And Katie Bosler is one of the latest to join our discussion. Well, Katie, a lot of people know you as the hospital's community relations director. You're a former journalist. You've had podcasts for the 49 Writers Group. How does this identity as a poet fit in with a very busy life? I'm exhausted talking about it.
Well, it's all poetry. It's all storytelling, really, right? I mean, I think poetry is the essence of storytelling. But really, whether you are writing a newspaper article or doing a radio story or doing a profile on someone who works at the hospital, my current job, or writing a poem or doing a spoken word poem. I mean, this is what human beings thrive on for millennia, is storytelling. And these are all just different forms of it. And maybe it's because I have an Irish mother and the Irish love to tell stories. But I'm compelled to learn other people's stories and tell theirs as well as my own. It just has been the way I've been pretty much my whole life.
So you do a mix of writing. I've seen your articles in the newspaper and, mm-hmm. of course, in the title Echoes, you've got poems there. So how mm-hmm. does poetry fit into that? How do you balance it?
Well, I think I came to poetry kind of late in life, I guess. I wrote a poem that I still have memorized, my first poem in third grade, which was kind of fun.
Oh, would you share it?
sure. Thick sauce, beautiful noodles. That's why I love spaghetti. But then my mother boss, who is sometimes cross, tells me not to slurp it up so. She tells me I look like an old Roman man who goes down to his pan. But I don't care how unsteady, I still love spaghetti.
Unsteady and spaghetti and rhyme and rhythm.
I think that's the only one I've memorized.
Wow, you memorized your first. Well, there are people in older generations where memorizing poems was part of their education. It was necessary to do that. I don't think it's so much necessary anymore, a requirement.
Not necessarily, but I don't know if that's such a good thing. You think of a classical education and you think of, people like Ernest Greening, for example, if you want to go back in Alaska history, who had a really classical education. And I think they had a wide breadth the ability to see different points of view.
Yeah, I think somewhere we got away from memorizing things because we mm-hmm. thought, well, that was kind of a rote approach to learning. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. nowadays, of course, you don't need to memorize. You can just go on the internet and find whatever you want. And I wonder if there is a piece of us that needs to memorize certain poems as part of our upbringing.
Well, I know I came to poetry, I think it was as a, at one point I hosted Morning Edition back in another life here on K2, 96 to 98. And because of my family situation was just too much. I wasn't good at getting up at that hour.
No,
I started to go out to UAS and took some writing classes, and one was poetry. And that was where I started writing poems that, like a lot of people here in Juneau, end up in Title Echoes, the UAS Literary Journal.
So we're going to start off by asking you to share a poem from another author that inspires you.
Okay, well, I have a couple picked out, but I will start with Ishmael Hope, who, I don't know if you've had Ishmael on your program yet.
Been trying to track him down. He's been mysteriously elusive. So I hope someday that we can interview him.
Well, Ishmael is an absolutely brilliant poet. And his book, Rock Piles Along the Eddy, I'm holding here. He's published this in 2010. And this one I just found really resonant. And it's called Talking with an Ancestor. The edge of the universe is like a rainbow. You can never reach the end. It is always just beyond wherever any spirit has ever reached. Just beyond, it is finally nothing, which is just negative space waiting to be witnessed into being, the breath of life awakened by joy. Think of the countless paths crossing each other, like the roots clumped together under an old, thick-stumped tree, which sprung from the rotting nutrients of its ancestors. That is what your mind is like, not the mass loping inside your skull, but the bead of light that rolls throughout your body and the bodies of the ones you love. Don't take notes while I am talking. It will come back to you for the millionth time when you recognize the buzzing surge of rattles, bare fists beating box drums, electricity, as the spirits hold hands, as they tell of things you've always known without knowing, never needing to hold on for too long.
I'd have to say that that is a very cosmic kind of poem. It's more than just beautiful language, but some very deep thoughts.
Yes. And I think it's also really universal. You know, he, of course, is referring at the end to his Tlingit heritage. But I think of when I went to Ireland in 1984 and, you know, went to a pub and just heard that music, that fiddle and pipe and flute and incredible spontaneous singing. And I just felt like, okay, I felt it in my spirit, in my bones. This, there's something that I'm relating to here that is much older than my physical body.
You know, maybe that's why in times of old, back in the era of Ovid and some of the ancient poets that we love, that there is something in the bones about the poetry that passes through the ages. And that definitely is one of those sort of deep in the bones kind of poem. Amazing.
Yes. Yes.
So I hope we can have him on our program sometime and have him talk about how he writes about these incredible images and ideas. So you said you picked several, so you've got another to share with us.
Well, yeah, while I'm on ancestors, I guess I might as well, I'll read part of this poem. And this is another Alaskan poet. She passed on, I think about 5 years ago now, and she was the poetry professor in the Master of Fine Arts and Creative Writing program that I went through at UAA. Her name was Ava Salidas. And the thing we have in common is my mother's of Irish descent, but my father is Latvian. My grandparents emigrated from Latvia to this country back in the early 1900s. And I'll read just part of this. It's called Prayer 46 from her book, Prayer in Wind. Kerr, 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 kerr. High or low, some variant mimicking any number of bird songs. Kerr, Latvian word for where. This morning, I hold kerr in my hands like a prayer wheel. Give it a spin, kerr, and its cousin, kas, what, who, where? And what and who my ancestors lifting language from birds. Where shall you build your nest, they asked, when in the displaced persons camp after World War II, the exiles were handed papers, Canada, Buffalo, Trinidad, commiserating heads together in the barracks, Kurtagad? Where now? Unwilling migrants, my mother, my father, Cincinnati, Chicago, then skip, hop, skip from Bronx to Amherst, to Silver Creek, New York. There they found themselves accidentals, foreign, blizzard blown, in the middle of a grape vineyard, mangling words, wearing clothes the wrong way, though something of the landscape's grizzled hills did look familiar. My mother took up birding, mesmerizing names of common species at her feeder. Nuthatchers, she called them, titmice, chickadees, jays. chased off voracious grackles, European starlings. How many times removed am I, splintered from origins, overwintering like a plover on a Pacific island? Cur, cur, cur. Curtu, 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 the Mina reiterates. Where you, where do you belong? Making the top 100 of invasives, cousin to my mother's hated starlings, ousting native owls, pueo from nesting holes. It's not their fault. Some homesick someone brought them over, hidden in her coat. On my first morning nene, native geese flapped over, calling softly, new, new? The way my mother asked when I migrated to Alaska. And now? And now? So that one, I think, is good for spring because it's about birds, but and finding place and being kicked, you know, basically kicked out of your where you're from. But also reminds me of my Latvian grandmother who made a home in upstate New York, and she communicated with the robins. Robin Redbreast, she called them in her thick Latvian accent. And she just watched that robin for hours, you know, hopping along and getting his worm. So found both of those poems very resonant with my life. And I imagine listeners will feel the same.
Well, I guess that's the beauty of poetry, is that you can attach a personal meaning to it, or you can attach a more universal meaning to it. So
yes.
You have spent a lot of energy helping other poets get their work out, other writers through your podcast, the articles you write. I have to wonder, is this because you think that there is something really important happening in the literary world in Alaska?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been on the board of 49 Writers, which is a kind of networking support organization, but also offers a lot of workshops and readings and a place for Alaskan writers to share their work for about 5 years now. And I find it just a good way to keep in touch with the Alaskan writing community, which is very strong. And as far as the podcast that I've been doing with for them for a few years now, it's called Active Voice. And started in 2018, and I interview Alaskan writers and poets and storytellers. Even I hope to branch out to more musicians in the future. And I just find it a really rich opportunity and that I like being involved with. Also, we have, you know, get in touch with, for example, Hank Lentfer, a Gustavus writer who has the book Raven's Witness. He's going to be doing a reading for us in the fall. So I'm kind of connect with the Southeast writers for this organization, which is based in Anchorage, but has board members from all over the state.
Do you think that there's something about Alaska's environment, extreme, beautiful, all those things that promotes good writing?
Oh yeah. I mean, you just what look out the window, whether it's a day like this, right? Or it's you're in the rainforest and it's pouring rain. That's poetry. You can't help it.
So the land itself is poetry, is maybe one way to look at it. So back to your writing, because like I said, you do so much of different kinds of writing. How do you say, oh, okay, this I will save for a poem, or this I will write an essay about? How does that work for
Well,
you?
I'm not very prolific. Like I'd say when I compare myself to other writers, I write a couple poems a year, really. I think that's my average that I would want it, that I get published or I really, you know, finish. So remind me of the question again.
Well, I just wondered, when you come up with a story to tell, how do you decide what format it's going to be in?
Yes. Okay. So what it is for me is I have an experience that is just very, really powerful. And I can't not write about it. You know, for example, a couple years ago, we had incredible northern lights out our front window and off our deck in Douglas. And I go out there and I'm just marveling over the northern lights. And a person who appeared to be experiencing homelessness is walking on the street below me, just really, I think, focused on their iPhone, staring at their phone. And I wanted to shout out to the person, look, it's the northern lights over your head. But what struck me was, no, this person is in their own space right now and they have enough going on. And so I didn't shout out to the person, but I felt like that was, that experience led me to want to write a poem about it.
So,
which
did
I don't have.
That was my next question.
Short poem.
We'll have to save it for another time. But this probably would be a great time to hear some of your own poetry. You want to set up what you've prepared for us?
Sure. I have a couple of poems. One was actually already shared on Juno Afternoon by Erica Berggren, the editor, student editor for Title Echoes this year. And the other one is a recent poem that I wrote inspired by taking walks with my dad along the California coast. So I could start with that one. It's called My Father in the Moment. New Year's Day 2021 is when I think that was the date I wrote. Anyway. We amble the pace of his aching 90-year-old knee, looking over a turquoise sea along sandstone cliffs dotted with circular formations, once molten lava smoothed by millennia, just bubbling around at one time, muses Dad. My father's eyes see only love. For a small child shaping sand burgers in the tide line, a pelican stretching a throat as long as its body, a seagull hopping about in hope of a free meal, cormorant mates, dark sentinels roosting. We take a break side by side on bench before a rough-edged seawall. I close my eyes, bask in low autumn sun. My eyes open to a squadron of pelicans rising as one, wings spread in a perfect line. As the sun dips toward the horizon, Dad observes the last glow of day reflected on the bric-a-brac trunk of a lanky palm tree, contrast with a taller, skinnier one, a bit bent alongside it.
So that is a moment in life.
Yeah, and just really inspired by my dad, who he's always been a very, very much in touch with nature person. He grew up in the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York. And every time I would go on a walk in nature with my father as a younger person, he's just immediately in touch with this natural environment and completely enthralled with it. And now that he's older and, you know, well retired and doesn't have a lot else going on in his life, going on a walk with him is just this kind of a spiritual and focused experience, because that's where he's at. He's right there with those images. That's all he's experiencing, but he loves it. And he's really loving that moment.
I don't know why, but somehow that's far more meaningful than a Facebook photo. Somebody would post about a walk with their dad.
Yeah.
Do you sometimes think that our Facebook world, our social media world of Twitters and Instagrams, that maybe we're missing out because we're so absorbed in that? And it doesn't replace poetry, I don't think.
Well, yes and no, because it's also, it's, you know, the online poetry world, like everything else, is exploding. So you've got all kinds of incredible work that's being not, you know, maybe not even officially published in a book, but is maybe it's on Facebook, maybe it's in an online journal. And I actually have a great book to read, to recommend to people if they're interested in poetry, more interested in it, called Don't Read Poetry by Stephanie Burt. And this is a book about how to read poems, but she's also a great poet and professor of poetry of English at Harvard. And she says that, you know, she does a lot of poetry reviews and kind of mines different sources for new poems. And sometimes she finds brilliant work, you know, on the internet.
Where do you go to look for brilliant work?
Oh, my bookshelf of poetry, which is pretty full, which includes most of the issues of Tidal Echoes. I'm something of a book collector, which I'm actually trying to stop buying books, but you know, let's put it this way. There's a lot of great unread poetry right on my bookshelf that I can just go to anytime.
So you don't have to try to go online. Well, before we run out of time, I would love to hear you read your own poem that was read by the Tidal Echoes editor on our show recently, but would love to hear it in your voice. It seemed like it was one of those moments where we were realizing that COVID-19 would be with us for a while and that it would change everything for us.
Sure, I will read it for you. And just real quick, I did do a podcast with Emily Wall, who of course is a very involved faculty member with Tidal Echoes. That just was recorded, and I will produce it, and it'll be the next podcast on Active Voice coming up. So I just wanted to put that out there and let you know, give you a heads up. So yeah, this poem is called, still kind of a working title, Ski Lungs, and here it is. Changes in infectious disease transmission patterns are likely a major consequence of climate change. That's from the World Health Organization. And that's just kind of a to start. Here's the poem. Last year, low snow. This year, snow globe snow, falling in slow-mo as my husband's son and I skin up the ski hill. Inhale, lift, slide foot forward. Exhale, push down heel, click, repeat. Skis glide up to another world. Chairlift shut down by the virus, shutting down thousands of lungs. Inhale, cold, coastal mountain air, snow and ice and conch, spruce and hemlock, Earth's lungs, the Tongass National Forest. Exhale. 2 years ago, my sister posted a photo of herself in an N95 mask as a red sun glowered over San Francisco. Forest fires gone wild. Now those masks reserved for frontline helpers for the viral crisis. Inhale, lift, slide foot forward. Exhale, push down heel, click, repeat. Our son and I skin in tandem rhythm, lungs pumping, quads burning, hips tightening, lower back aching, like being in labor with him a generation ago, a global pandemic, an unlikely nightmare. Reach an expanse of nothing but cool, smooth white, a world away from our house down the road of too many projects and too much stuff. Peel skins from skis, fold into packs, clip into bindings. Before us, a hollowed out national depression, filled to the brim with frozen styrofoam, smothered with a light layer of what falls in the snow globe. Let ourselves go with gravity down untracked fields of white light. Inhale, lift, slide foot forward. Exhale, push down heel, click, repeat. Easter Sunday, up the mountain, this time with our daughter, to a smiling wide expanse called Heavenly Valley. One at a time, we'll ride a magic carpet, rebound from one turn to the next, just steep enough, just right. Inhale. Après-ski mint tea, glorious scent rising, where the swab collects for the virus.
Wow. I like all the rhythms, the repeated phrases of going up the mountain, the skiing. I could feel it. Not only did I see it, but I felt it. Beautiful work. Oh,
good. That's good to hear. And that was one of those experiences I was compelled to write about. So worked on it. Worked on crafting that.
All right. Well, we have to come to the end of our conversation, but Katie Bosler, thank you for being with us and sharing so openly about what you do and love.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Rhonda, and thank you for celebrating poetry, and shout out to Ishmael.
Call him Ishmael. All right. Well, thanks so much. Have a great afternoon. Bye, Katie.
All right, you too. Thank you.